So today on the We Have a Meeting podcast, we are joined by an incredible guest known throughout the sales industry for his breathtaking, no-nonsense approach. When it comes to sales theory, we couldn't align more. In today's episode, we're going to be asking some of the biggest unanswered questions when it comes to sales. Joining us on the podcast for the second time, it's the UK's most hated sales trainer, Benjamin Dennehy. Benjamin, how are you, sir?
I am very well. It's always good to be back with Zach and Jack. I enjoy your content and your humour, and I love the fact that you're huge evangelists for what I do. So I couldn't be prouder.
We love Great. It.
We are. You were actually, I think, we wrote down guests that we wanted on the podcast when we started it, and you were the first name. So
really?
I've had you on twice.
Well, I'm flattered. I am. I genuinely am. It's really nice to know that.
It's interesting how it's come full circle, because from listening to you on a podcast, being inspired to start this business, to now talking to you regularly, running an event with you in the not too distant future.
Yes, right.
It's funny how things work out.
Are we still stressing the event sold out? Let's stress it's a sold out event to those watching.
Sold out.
It's a sold out event.
Sold out.
Sold out event.
Sold out, yeah.
But the next one will sell another farmyard animal.
Yeah.
We'll magic weekend.
Sell me the porker.
Yeah, exactly. So let's jump in with it's a bit of a university question. It's one of those big questions that could go any way. But why do sales trainers exist?
Because salespeople suck, I suppose, is the simplest answer. Why do sales trainers exist? It's a good question. Why do I exist? I exist because I was in sales, so to speak. And I've been in it since 2004. I fell into it like virtually everyone in sales. I was meant to be a barrister. That's what I qualified as. This wasn't one to be my life. And then after 10, 15 years of doing sales, I realized I kind of sucked at it. After 10, 15 years, I realized I'd pretty much had the same year over and over again, and nothing changes. And 15 years on, and you're still coming up against the same shit. And it's like, this just seems like the most pathetic existence. And you'd see people around you that were apparently good, but I could never, ever quite see why. And now I've come to the conclusion that we're just right people at the right time taking orders. Yeah. And obviously if you suck up enough in a corporate structure, you slowly get promoted. It's got nothing to do with your skill or ability. It's just your suckability, right? And so there's a lot of people get put into positions where they get in front of people that were going to buy anyway. And then they take all the credit. Yeah. You know, it's like that saying, nobody gets fired for hiring IBM. You know, if you're an IBM salesman, you can hardly really take a lot of credit in some ways. It's like, well, they bought IBM. They were probably going to buy before you walked in. So I decided to figure out how to sell. I wanted to master the art of selling. And I met a guy along the way, a guy called Marcus Kalki, and he changed my life with the psychology of selling. And when I saw the psychology of selling, I realized, actually, this is a lot like law. This is a process. If you master the process, get good at certain things, then you'll always be able to make money. And that was my mission. So then I consciously decided I wanted to, just like someone goes to be a law school, wants to be a lawyer, I want to be a lawyer. I wanted to learn how to sell. And then as I was doing that, a lot of clients would say, you're really good. You got a unique style of selling. Would you be able to teach us? And it sort of transversed into that. And now I make a pretty good living out of it. I do enjoy it. It's frustrating. Because so many people don't want to change. Yeah, so that's one of the downsides to it. But we exist because there are people out there that know selling should be a lot easier. But everybody just tells them, do more of the same. Just hit the phones. Just get in front of more people. And it's not like that. That's a lottery. So I exist to take the handful of people, maybe 5 to 10% that are in sales, that actually say, no, you know what? If you get really good at this and learn it as a skill and as a noble profession, you can make a lot of money being absolutely open, transparent, and honest, but mastering certain skills of communication. So that's why I exist, to make certain people's lives better.
So having you as a sales trainer, and I refer to you on LinkedIn as the GOAT, which I think I had to tell you what it meant. It's the greatest of all time. You're like, who is this bloke coming on my LinkedIn feed calling me a goat? And that's people the farmyard animal stuff. So obviously you're incredible, and you're one of the best, if not the greatest of all time.
I'll
So
take that. It's not true, but I'll take it.
take it and run with it. So we have this conversation, and it's interesting because it's maybe in a sense what we do, but if you can train people to be good, then what is the point of a sales director or a sales manager, and what do they do all day?
Well, I've asked myself that question a lot. In fact, I just made a comment the other day. I started work with a new company and they don't have a sales director. And I said, I'm kind of glad because I said, I've been in this business 20 years now in sales. And I said, I don't know what a sales director does every day because they don't seem to be mentoring, they don't seem to be coaching, they don't seem to be training. So what are you doing? And I still don't know. Is it looking at spreadsheets saying we need to sell more? Well, you don't need a sales director to do that, right? The group collectively can look at a spreadsheet and come to that conclusion. They're into the strategic thought. What's strategic thought? We have a product. This is what it does. We just need to figure out which companies we need to talk to. Again, there's no rocket. So I don't know what sales directors do. Now, there are going to be sales directors watching this and you get outraged at me. And if which is the case, please contact me and let me know what you do every day, because I don't know. But I do know a lot of them don't coach, they don't train, and they don't get their hands dirty. They like to go, from what I've seen, they like to go on the big meetings at the final bit, you know. Yeah, they're in there, and they get all the glory. But I honestly don't know. And it's a shame, because every company I go to, they want their teams to get better and they want their people to thrive. And they have a sales manager, but a lot of sales managers are unfortunately lumbered with their own book. They have to still sell because a company says they can't afford just to have someone managing the people. They need to make money. And the problem is if someone's told they have to sell as well as train, what's the number one priority? Selling. Why? Because that's the one thing that can be measured on. You haven't hit your target, Mr. Sales Manager. I've been training the guy. No. Yeah. So every company I go to doesn't want to go down the route of having someone independently just managing the people. And I think that is one of the biggest problems. And because a lot of sales managers tend to be sales people that have just migrated up, which is interesting, right? If you're good at sales, why the hell would you want to go into management? I've never understood that. It's a weird thing. So what do they do? Honest answer, I don't know. What should they do? They should be looking for the best people, hiring the best people, and then trying to get the best out of them. And they should be able to lead by demonstration. They should be able to do everything that they teach. I'm like that. I'm not what I call an academic trainer. You know, there's a lot of trainers out there that are academic. They can teach you the theory. And then, well, can you apply that to my world? And they struggle, right? So if you can't do the things you're teaching or you're leading, then I don't know why you're there. But I don't know if that really answers the question, because the answer is I don't know what they do, but if they did exist, well, they should be coaching, training, mentoring, listening to calls, lifting people up, teaching new things, but not trying to sell themselves.
I don't think we know either. I think that's why we were asking same conclusion.
I've sat in meetings. I've sat in meetings. This is true. I remember this. I sat in a meeting once with the CEO, a sales director, and some other people, and I was asking certain questions, and they didn't know the answers. Then I was explaining certain things, and I'll never forget it. The CEO just turned to a sales director and said, "So what do you do?"
Wow.
Because why is it we don't know these things? How is it that this guy in a red hat and long hair knows more about these things than we do, and I've got a full-time 80,000 plus K a year sales director? How do you not know this, Mr. Sales Director? And so it was it was an awkward moment, not for me. I quite enjoyed it, but this is why I never get phone calls from sales directors or sales managers. They don't hire me. I'm not the guy they go to. It's their boss that hires me.
It's interesting, actually, when you say that. I think a sales director, we don't do this, but if you were to ring a sales director or have a meeting with a sales director doing what we do, they would probably say nothing was wrong. Because in using a company like ours, you'd have to admit you weren't good.
And
so
ironically,
you wouldn't.
sales directors want to you to sell to them the way their guys sell, which is crappily too, which is interesting, right? They want you to do exactly the same thing that their salespeople are doing, and then they moan to you that their salespeople aren't successful. It's interesting. They're an interesting breed.
Because we've had sales directors inquire with us about solving a problem they think exists, but to a CEO, it's like, oh, it's all crap. I just think the sales reps think I just can't get in front of enough people, but the CEO is probably going to say, actually, the whole thing is just a car crash. So, yeah, it's interesting.
It is, and it's CEOs and sales directors see the world differently. It's quite funny how more disaffected and annoyed a CEO or an MD is with the sales than the sales director. Sales director spends most of their time defending what their guys are doing, because ultimately the guys are doing basically what the sales director directs and leads. So by attacking what the salespeople are doing, by chance you're attacking them. So they're very defensive. Oh no, I think they're doing all right. You know, we've got a few areas. Oh, I love the expression, we're great when we get in front of people. We're just not in front of enough.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, I think you're pretty crap when you're in front of people as well, but you know, you're not in front of enough to realize how bad you are. Yeah.
It's one of the it's one of the questions on our new website, is when they inquire, it's like, if we put you in front of people, are you confident that you can sell? Because there's no point us doing all this legwork and running and kicking doors down if it's just going to end badly. Like, you go, right, well, I sat 8 meetings and no one bought anything. Okay, well, why? They were there, they were motivated. Do you know what I mean? Did you do your bit? So it's interesting. I think on the sales director, sales managers, it's like, you should know your team inside out, and it's like, how are you going to get the very best of them? It's the same way. If you look at me and Zach, aren't football fans, so I don't know why I was going to try and do a football analogy, but I was going to be like Alex Ferguson. You've got to know where to put them and how to motivate them and things like that. But it does feel like a lot of them stick their head in a spreadsheet and just go, well, and it's 80% like strategy and 20% doing. Well, we were having this conversation the other day of, I think we've been so successful because we've just gone, right, okay, we're going to do this. Cool, that's enough strategy, and then do it. Whereas so many people are like waiting for it to happen.
And I think it comes down to the people they hire, because it's the difference between a hunter and a farmer. And you can have salespeople that are, they say he's so good with people, he's great with relationships. Well, make him an account executive. People that are good at farming and fostering relationships, that is a skill set. I don't have that skill set. Yeah, I get sick of people very easily. I rub people up the wrong way after a while. I don't like spending too much time in one place. So I'm a hunter-gatherer. I like going out with a spear, killing stuff, spreading myself in blood, having a bit of a party afterwards. Then I move on and then I go look for something else to kill and let the rest of the people deal with the carcass and whatnot. And they're too tight. And a lot of they confuse those two as well. And they have farmers trying to hunt and gather, and they're just not suited for it. And it goes down to the recruitment process. Most people don't know what to recruit for in good salespeople. It's like, he didn't dribble. He looks good in a suit. And he seemed affable. It's all right, you're in. That's it,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You're giving me a big smile there, I think, Zach. I think there's probably attributes of Zach being the stone cold killer and me being the farm. We're very farm heavy, aren't we? Hens and
very
goats
farm
and farms and
yeah.
So let's move into, if we can, some skill stuff. So some actual practical skill based things. So I think you're widely regarded as someone who brought the pattern interrupt to the mainstream salespeople through LinkedIn. You see everyone talking about it. And when I started off in sales, perhaps things that we were doing that might be pattern interrupts weren't. And it's more broadly talked about now. So
it is.
There's one that you're obviously really, really well known for. I know you've got others.
Yeah.
But could you give us maybe an example of your top three and where you apply them? So like what personality type or sector or where you would apply your top three and why?
Yeah. So the thing with pattern, you are right. I started writing about these things about 6 years ago. And I remember I used to get a lot of grief. This is before I was really well known. I was just this guy, stupid red hat. 6 years ago, no one really knew it. And I was writing about pattern interrupts. And I used to get a lot of abuse, a lot of flack, actually. So I started, I started phoning people that would abuse me, cold call them. And all of them buckled under it because they didn't know it was me. They didn't know I was going to call. And then they would just go along with it. Because, you know, when you're sitting behind your keyboard, you've got time to think. It's very easy to be brave and say, if you did that to me, I'd rah, rah, rah. Yeah, it's easy. But in the real world, when it's happening to them, none of them buckled. They all went along with it, and they gave me the 30 cents. It was quite fascinating. So, and actually, you are right. Every day, there's some SDR's got a new deviation on it. So in some ways I'm flattered. So you got to always keep ego in check, right? Part of, hey, that's not fair. That's, it's not mine. I mean, I didn't invent any of this. Is the first person to use a phone is probably did a patent interrupt. In fact, the first patent right is, hello, my name's Benjamin from ABC Company. How are you today? That was the original patent interrupt, wasn't it? So my favourite ones are, and I use them for a particular reason. So the easiest one, particularly at director level, MD, CEO, is, look, I'll be up front, or look, you're going to hate me. It depends, I don't mind how you start it, but I have different ways because I, oh, look, I'll be up front. This is a sales call. You can either hang up now or let me have 30 seconds. What do you want to do? And the reason that works is multifaceted. The first one is, if you give an order to someone who's used to making the orders, there is an instinctive reaction and a gut level to say no. Yeah, that's why I do it. So when you say to a decision maker, do you want to hang up? There's this almost no. Fuck you, don't tell me what to do, right? So you get that instant no. It's to the point and it's honest. Most of them like it because these guys want you to cut to the chase. Cut, you know, time is of the essence. So it's direct, it's to the point. There's all this debate about whether you need permission or you shouldn't need permission. I'm not fussed about the permission, but I like the fact that when I ask them, can I have 30 seconds, they tend to give it to me. And all I want is 30 seconds, because that's the purpose of my call, is to get that 30-second bit out. So that's one of them. So this is a cold call, this is a sales call, this is a prospecting call. And others I had to develop on the way. So with recruiters and FX, when I started working with them years ago, they would struggle, because if you're in recruitment or FX, the first thing an HR director or a CFO says to you as soon as they get a cold call is, this about FX? Or is this about recruitment, right? And then they would default into justifying and defending their call. So I remember the first time I was asked to make an FX call in front of a room full of traders. Talk about pressure, right? And so they said, the first thing that's going to happen to you is they're going to say, is this about FX? Is this about FX? So I decided to deal with it. I said, I'll deal with it. So as soon as the phone rang and the guy answered, and I go, is that Richard? He goes, yeah. I go, Richard, look, I'll be up front. If I told you this call was about FX, would a little piece of you die? And he just groaned. Ugh. And this was good, because now the guy's going to vent. And when you let a guy vent, a vent is like a good vomit, right? And you feel good after a good vomit. You know that feeling when you're curled up on the bathroom floor, shivering but feeling good? You've all been there after a heavy night out, right? So rather than justify, I go, so look, I'll be up front. This, if I told you this was about FX, would a little piece of you die? And he goes, oh, yes. I go, well, before you hang up then, can I ask, why does everybody say that? And then he just goes, do you know how many calls I get every day? And it doesn't matter how many times I explain to people that I'm comfortable with my da-da-da. I go, that must be very frustrating for you. Yeah, it is. I go, so last thing then, if the next 30 seconds are different, will you hear me out? And he goes, I tell you what, you already sound different. I'll let you. So I just kept doing that. Nothing's foolproof, obviously. Some people will say yes and hang up. That's part of the game. But it statistically, it achieves a better result. So that's another one of my favourite. Oh, and another one, just for shits and giggles, which I do like. And I've done it numerous times, and it gets a bit of a laugh. Sometimes it falls flat because they don't get it. Yeah, but it's when someone says, I'll be up front, if I told you this was a sales call, would you hang up? And they go, yes, I would. I go, fair enough, I won't say that then. Yeah, now some get it, yeah. Some don't get it. The ones that get it have a little chuckle, and then you can talk. The ones that don't get it, there's this sort of muted silence. And then you go, do you want to hang up? Well, what's it about? And then I go into my 30 second. So those are three. I mean, and you can, and everything on the LinkedIn now is a permutation of one of these types. Do you want to roll the dice? Can I have 27 seconds? It's all the same thing. And this is one other thing. People watching this say, well, okay, Benjamin, if everybody starts using these pattern interrupts, won't they become useless? Well, think about this. How many people do we engage with on LinkedIn on a daily basis? Probably what, 1% of that? There are thousands of salespeople. There are millions of companies. Trust me, it's going to take a long time before the world is saturated with, I've heard that one before, you know. So
we actually called a guy the other day with the one that you're most known for. One of the guys in my office did it, and the guy's response was, hello, Benjamin Danahay.
I got an email from a gentleman in Australia. I don't know, I've never met him. He said, Benjamin, I just thought I'd share this with you. I'm just cold calling. I've watched all your videos and I used your line. And this is in Australia. And he said, the guy answered. He goes, I follow the guy in the red hat too. So,
it's so good.
It's hilarious, right? And like I said, I didn't create the Patnam Drop. This thing's been around a long, long time. But I just popularized it, I think, because I was one of the first people to. And that's another thing I did. There's not a lot of sales trainers that put their stuff online. They weren't certainly 6 years ago, showing it phoning. And I would do that to prove to people, look, everything I say I do, I'm not pontificating. I can do what I teach. So, and that's, I think, what, and that Mike won it, that Mike won it, and all of that, and it just went together, yeah. Anyway.
It's beautiful. Sorry, Zach.
I was just going to say about the, because I think you probably found this quite funny as well, but the pattern interrupt, the way we found that sometimes it works is people will give you 30 seconds, even when they don't want to, or they're in like a situation where they shouldn't give it you. And I had one recently where a guy laughed and said, yeah, go on, you can have your 30 seconds. I gave him my spiel and he went, oh, is it a work call? And I said, yeah, yeah. And he went, my mum's literally just died in the last half an hour and I'm sat with the nurse now, so I wouldn't be able to take the call. Why did you take it in the first, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
why did you accept the 30 seconds if your mum's just died? Really, really weird. But we have loads of ones like that where people accept it in odd scenarios. That's the power of it, I suppose.
Yeah,
and I think it's that thing of experimenting. You can play around. There's so many variations that you can bring. And do you know what I mean? I hear some of my team now, and they go, "You probably had 743 of these a day. Do you want to? It's just, do you want to drop kick your phone out the window, or do you know what I mean? All of those different things. We did one once that felt so flat on its arse. I don't know if you've heard this, but we were trying to sell SEO. And I called people up and I go, is that Benjamin? They go, yeah. I go, Benjamin, I've got some awful news. And they go, what? I go, I've just been on Google and you're not appearing on the first page. And they go, get the fuck out of here. Why are you ringing me? I think about three phone calls using that pattern interrupt. I went, yeah, this isn't going to work.
Now, there's a psychology behind that, though. And the reason that didn't work is if you tell any human being they're doing something wrong, they will defend what they're doing even if they know they're wrong. It's just the way we are. So you can never, this is what one of the things I'm going to drum home when I'm teaching sales. You can't tell someone that what they're doing is wrong because they will fight for it. And I don't want them fighting for what they're doing wrong. Yeah, so yeah, yeah. I did one once when I used to be in advertising and marketing. And I was trying to get a hold, I think it was like the marketing director of sort of like Pepsi or Coke, one of these big, hard to get hold of chaps, and my clients were very specific. We want to get in front of these companies. I said, fine, just tell me who, I'll get you in front of them, just let me do my thing. And I remember I finally got through to this guy and he answered. I said, look, I'll be up front with you. I said, you are my white whale of marketing and I have been chasing you all over this ocean. Can you give me 30 seconds? It's all I need. And the guy started laughing. He goes, go on then, you can have your aunt. Booked an appointment with him for my client. So you've just got to say something different. You've just got to say something that stands out. Don't get wedded to one or the other. No one's bad. Some are worse, obviously, as you've just demonstrated. Some are bad. But most, you know, as long as it's short, sharp, clipped, and easy to understand, it'll work. And you know what? In about 30 years, we'll all be going back. Some guy in another red hat's going to come up and say, hey, the best pattern interrupt is, hi, my name's Benjamin from ABC Company. How are you today? Yeah. And we're going to start the whole cycle again, right? That's how the human experience is.
Oh, God, that's so good. So keeping with the theme of being practical for the listeners and stuff like that, one of the big ones that we get is obviously there's so many different objections. And we have a lot of ways that we would probably combat this. So one of the biggest objections is, I need to see an email first, or can you send me an email? What is your go-to when handling that?
Well, there are several ways to deal with this. The first one is if you get to the point where somebody wants you to send an email, you've already fucked it up. The call's gone badly already. Something's gone wrong. So what you're now trying to do is trying to deal with the horse after it's bolted. And this is a problem. Salespeople are always coming to you, what do you do when this happens? I thought, well, it should be, what do I do to prevent this happening? That's the better question. But they're always insistent, no, I need an answer. So if I do get the send me an email, I know and you know and they know and everyone knows that send me an email is just a very polite way of saying fuck off. Yeah? That is what it means. So all I'll do is I'll just gently challenge it. And I've said this before. If someone says, can you send me, I say, look, I'm happy to send you an email, but can I be upfront with you? typically when someone says, "Send me an email," it's just a really, really polite way of saying, "Go away." Is that what's happening here? And you'll be amazed at the number of people that say, "Yeah, fine. Shall we just part friends and I'll maybe reach out a couple up, see if anything's changed." All right, fair enough, bye. I leave happy. Yeah, but some will say, no, I mean it. And then I just do one last test then. Is there any, and I know everyone does this, is there anything specific you want to see? And if they can't give me anything specific, no, just whatever you've got. It's dead. So all I'll do is, I don't send emails even if I say I'll send one, I won't send one. You can actually phone people up and say, "Did you get my email?" "No, I never sent one." But they don't even know, right? They'll lie regardless. So even if you don't send one, you can still ask them if they saw it and they'll still say no. No one is sitting at their desk waiting for your email. I guarantee it.
It's when they say, yeah, send it to info@, and it's, well, I'm not going to do this dance, am I? I'm not going to waste my GCSE in English.
No. There is no point sending emails, people. It's like somebody, I'll put it this way, if you pass one of those charity muggers, you know, the chuggers, as they call them, on the streets in London, or probably in Manchester, it's big enough, you get these chuggers. "Hey, sir, how are you? Do you want to get..." Oh, God, you just want to smack him, right? Well, next time you walk past one of them, say, "I tell you what, why don't you send me a direct mail leaflet? I'll read it when I get home." Never going to happen, right? So, yeah. So, no, my advice is don't send email. Achieve... This is it, though. Once, one time, you sent an email and they got back to you. Salespeople hold on to the one exception for dear life like it's the rule. I let go of the exceptions and base on the statistical reality. Statistical reality, very few, maybe 1% would ever bother responding. I think even in the world of direct marketing, if 4% of people read your stuff, that's considered a success. You know, that's how low the numbers are for this sort of stuff.
I was telling Jack the other day about a guy that I'd booked in for us who... They basically asked for an email, and I just said, "Oh, I don't send emails," and paused. And then there was a bit of a longer pause, and he went, "Well, I could sit down with you next week."
Exactly.
And I think a lot of, you probably think this as well, a lot of sales is just things that you would naturally probably do in your normal life, but for some reason you forget that's how you would treat other people in a work capacity, by that false niceness, not challenging.
Yeah. The challenge salespeople have is when they come to work, that's why I have this hat, that's why I got the hat made. Underneath is a buyer, and I come into work, and I see this little hat on, it says salesman. And then this buyer with a stupid hat on tries to sell. And so we start to act in this really weird way, and money is the big issue. We suddenly see the people we're phoning have money, and because they have money, now suddenly have they more power than me. And so you don't talk to them like you talk to someone normally. You start to put them on a pedestal, and you start to want to impress them, you start to want to like them, and you change how you speak. Whereas I just talk to people as if they're my equal. They're never my better. No matter how shitty my day's been, they're still my equal. And I'm not here to try and get a meeting. I'm just here to figure out if you suffer from problems I fix and want to explore it. I'm not here to get everyone to say yes. It's not a Darren Brown trick, look into my eyes. You know, I want the right people in front of me. 90% of people you talk to aren't right for you now. I'm after the 10% that are, because that's where the money is. It's what's called prospecting. You know, if gold mining was just washing gold, dirt off gold, it would be fucking easy. It's not. It's not washing dirt off gold. It's washing loads and loads and loads of dirt for a tiny little bucket at the end, but it's worth a lot. But so much work, so much frustration, so many machines breaking weather. The whole thing's fucking tough, but it's worth it for that little pot.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Because sometimes I think it's we find it early on in the first probably 3 months when people start to kind of start to click a bit, then there's this belief that you can convince everyone that everyone is going to start saying, that person said they've already got something in place, they've got no budget and they're not the decision maker. What could I have said? Nothing.
How about buy?
yeah, exactly.
I mean, because I said this when I'm working with companies and obviously they're always trying to poach business. And it's it, but I'm pretty certain when your competitors are phoning your clients, you're hoping all of them are saying, we're really very happy with the company we're working with. Yeah? And if you're doing your job, this is it. Some people, a lot of businesses deliver on what they say they're going to do. So it's very hard to poach someone. You can't get me to change my phone contract unless something's pissing me off about the service I'm getting, because it's much for much, right? Until I'm pissed off with what's happening, the odds of me swapping is slim. So you can't phone me up and convince me on the phone, you need a better phone service. Why? This phone works fine. I've got all the data, all the information. I don't have an issue with it. But you phone me on the day when my signal's cut out twice and I've been on calls and I'm a bit pissed off. Now I'm going to listen. And I'm going to change, not because I think you're better. I'm changing out of spite.
Okay. So another topic that tends to divide people. What's the role of rapport in a sales call? Rapport.
Ah, rapport. Well, it's certainly not cheesy, conversational shite about the football or the rugby or the fact they're all being taxed to death over the next 3 years. No, people confuse rapport with cheesy sort of stuff. Rapport is making people comfortable. And making people comfortable is a skill. Because most people tend to make others awkward and uncomfortable. You just sit in a room with salespeople and watch how they act, how they sit, how they interact. And it's so formulaic. And they don't make the prospect feel comfortable. And they ask questions in a way that makes people feel a little cross-examined and interrogated. So rapport, the key to selling well, is making someone opposite you feel comfortable. And in order to make people feel comfortable, I have to behave and act a certain way to get them there. And so, you know, I deliberately look the way I do for a reason, because I don't come across as particularly threatening when I walk into a room. Well, what can this fucking idiot with long hair teach me, yeah? We'll hear him out, then we'll chuck him out sort of thing, right? So I've seen the looks I've seen it when I've walked in. You get that look where they give you that look, one up and down look, and it's like, what the fuck? Yeah? And then as soon as I see that look, I think, got one. Yeah. So it's making people feel comfortable. That's what rapport is. And to make people feel comfortable, the easiest way is for you to deliberately struggle. Because when you deliberately struggle, people naturally are inclined to rescue and help you. And when they start to help you, they start to feel good about themselves. Now, there's a rule here, though. It's a skill. Too many people go in and act like Mr. Bean. So, no, not Mr. Bean. I said slightly struggle and dumb yourself down. I did not say act like Mr. Bean. And people, it's a fine line to walk. But struggling, I put on a stutter at times. I get things wrong. I act confused. I scratch my head. I do all these things because the prospect's looking at me. And when they think that I'm struggling, yeah, got one over on the salesman. Put him in his place. And that's good. And when they're feeling like the defense will start to lower. So everything I do is choreographed to make people comfortable. But it's learning how to question, learning how to soften, learning how to nurture, learning how to act. There's a lot that goes into it. It's not just, be a moron. Which I can do quite well as well. I'll just let you know. I play moron well.
So it sounds like you can build rapport with someone without talking about yourself, your prospects, what you have in common, your company. Oh. You can build rapport without any of that.
Oh, that's all nonsense. I've got to the end of meetings and people have bought. I remember one time in front of a CEO of a recruitment company, he didn't like me. He hated me to start with. He didn't even want to be in the meeting, but I insisted I'd only come to the meeting if the CEO was there, because ultimately he buys my stuff. He was hostile to start with, and I thought, fuck it. This guy doesn't like me. I can't actually make this worse. So when people don't like me, I'm even more relaxed. Yeah, it's the opposite. Most salespeople think they got to step up. I think this is even better. I don't even want to work here anyway. Right? So then I just went on, and we spent, by the end of the hour meeting, he was 100% in. He goes, I'm in. He goes, I don't know what you've done to me, but I hated you when you came in here. I wanted to walk out. He goes, I was actually tempted to get up and walk out. I was, well, why didn't you? And then we ended up chatting. I go, well, now that we're working together, can I ask you a question? And he goes, yeah. I go, okay. I go, if you think that was good, how about this? This is my magic trick. I go, what's the name of my company? He goes, I don't know. I go, who do I work with? He goes, I don't know. I said, how long have I been doing this? He goes, I don't know. I go, other than the fact my name is Benjamin, what do you know about me? And he goes, I don't know. He goes, how, yet you've agreed to give me all this money. He goes, how did you do that? I said, because all I did was talk about the most important thing, you. All I did was ask you questions about you, and you opened up. And because I know what to ask, because I know my world, I know what to get you talking about that'll lead you towards sales training. That's all I've done. I'm the most unimportant person in this room, sir. And he goes, I can't wait for this. And yeah, I ended up working them for about nearly a year, I think. So it's all about just making people comfortable, and it's not cheesy comfortable. And that's what salespeople struggle with. And they all look like they've gone to the same Primark or TK Maxx and bought the same suit, don't they? Yeah. Yeah, it's just, oh, stop it. Anyway, I hope that answered your question.
It was beautiful. I think it was so good. When we do call listening in every morning where we listen to calls from the previous day, and we played one the other day, 10-minute call, and I was like, got to the end, and I was like, did you hear what didn't happen? And they're all like guessing, oh, he didn't do this, he didn't. I was like, no, didn't say the name of the company once. That person just agreed to sit down, nothing. It's like, beautiful. It doesn't matter. It's all irrelevant. There's no how are you, this is us, this is all about us. If you go in with the right methodology, and I think you are seeing an intake of people starting to want to do better and do the right things, but there's always going to be shitty salespeople, which is good because it makes our job easy.
Oh, look, you guys are in an industry where you're always going to have clients. People are always going to outsource. I mean, that was my business. I started off doing that. I even explained to Zach when we met up that I actually set up a business doing this, but I learned very quickly I'm not really a people person, right? I couldn't handle it. I admire and respect that you guys have built a business and you can work with all these people. I'm a lone wolf, yeah? And so I can only scale to a certain size, but I'm happy with the size I can scale to. But I have a lot of respect and admiration for you chaps who've come in and said, yeah, I can do this, I can build a bigger, and you will build a big business. And you're going to be, well, you are successful. You're just going to continue to increase your success. And I feel quite chuffed that I had a small little part to play in your future careers. And now we get to hang out with each other and do events. And I was quite lonely until people like you came along. It was just little old me battling LinkedIn.
Well... There's plenty of other top. Can I ask? There's one sort of almost philosophical question I want to finish on for you.
Yes.
I was thinking about this on the drive in this morning. It's not written down. I've not spoke to Jack about it before.
Oh.
But I think we would assume that you became the UK's most hated sales trader and had nothing to work on in your own skill set as you've gone forward. But what's one thing that you've perhaps learned in your latter career that you wish you'd known at the start that would have made your life easier?
Oh, it always sounds cliched when you say it, but the biggest thing, I think, is detachment from the outcome. And I know it's such an easy phrase to throw out, because it's very hard to do in practice. I remember when I was trying to get good at this, and a lot of people just assume you're natural. I'm never naturally good. Everything that I teach and do, I've had to learn and master. I used to be a typical happy, clappy salesman. I used to call it the stun gun approach. My clients would say, you're so good at getting meetings. I said, it's like a stun gun. I just go, bang! Yeah, and they're so stunned. It's like, all right, yeah, we'll meet with you. Because it was the world of advertising and marketing, it was all fine. But I realized that this wasn't achieving a lot. And as I started to figure out a way of selling properly and using a methodology and trying to follow a structure, I started becoming excited. I want to get a meeting going. I've got to prove this works. I've got to prove this works. So I was so focused on where I was going that I wasn't focused on what I was doing to get there. And once I learned, actually, I don't need your business. Even if I did. The hardest thing is sitting in front of someone when you really want their business and then trying to act and pretend like you don't. And when you can do it when you need it, it becomes incredibly easy to do when you don't need it. And I always ask my clients this question. If you were a millionaire and you're only doing what you do for the sheer joy. You don't need to sell your product or service. You just love showing people it and teaching people about it because you're an evangelist and it doesn't matter if they buy. You don't care. Would you put up with half the crap your prospects put you through now? And oh, everyone without fail says no. So you're only doing it because of the money. You're behaving this way because you want the money. And then you reinforce in the mind of sales of prospects why they're allowed to lie, deceive, hide, and cheat from you, because you act in a manner. You act in a way like a guy who wants their money. And then they say, the game is on. My job is to stop you. Whereas I go and it's like, look, mate, I'm not this blunt, but basically it's, look, mate, I got a warehouse full of stuff that works. I know it works. I've built a business on it. This stuff fucking works. I'm not here to justify my existence to you. I'm here for you to convince me why I should work with you. That's it. That's selling. I have something I want to sell. I don't even sell to everybody. I sell to the people I want to sell to, the people that pay my fees on my terms. I'm not here just for anyone to, oh, I like it, but I want to do it for 30% less. No. Oh, well, if you want my business, actually the irony is I don't want your business. I'd like it, but I don't need it. And that is the mindset. And it's very hard to do that mindset. So if you want to get that mindset, do what Zach has done. Do what Zach has... Jack. Do what these guys have done. Quit your fucking job and set up a business. That's how you do it. It's very hard to do this sitting in an office with someone paying you to be there with all these stupid metrics that they're measuring you on. Yeah? Quit your job and go out and sell something.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Very good advice. I think I've got 10 times better since I
took
that
advice.
I think that might be the blunt advice that I took that made me start this off from you. So
we've come full circle.
This is it. If you think you're good at sales, why are you working for somebody else? It just makes no sense to me. Because selling, other than banking, I think this is the only other profession where you can print your own paycheck if you want to. It's only limited by the limitations you put on yourself. Mine's limited by scalability, but that's why I'm moving a lot more online. But I do very well. I earn a lot of money out of this. I'm very happy with what I do. And that's because I'm my own boss. I can do what I want. And I'm allowed to be detached because no one taps me on the shoulder and says, hey, Benjamin, you didn't get that deal over the line. No, I don't care.
Yeah.
I got another things lined up. I'll be fine. I'll hit my target. Don't you worry about that. Yeah.
So, look, I feel like we could talk all day, as usual.
Well, that's why we're having an event, so we could talk for 2 hours.
Yeah, exactly. So we could talk. So if you are listening to this, keep an eye out for future events, because Sell Me This Hen, our event on the 29th of November, is now sold out.
Sold out. The farm shut down.
So sold out. The farm's shut down, but we'll be opening another abattoir up the road shortly.
Yeah, we can have the follow-up, the bird flu special or something.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Mad cow disease. So if someone's watching this and they don't know, this is the first time they've heard of you and they think, who is this guy and how do I work with him? What's the best way of getting in touch with you?
Well, best way is LinkedIn. Also got a website, which ironically is called UK's with an S, UK's Most Hated Sales Trainer.com, or YouTube. Again, just look for UK's Most Hated Sales Trainer on YouTube. I don't hang out on Facebook or Twitter, or I don't know what Instagram I could do in the world of sales. This is me crying. This is me dying. This is me looking like a failure. I don't know. But yeah, that's how you can find me, LinkedIn, YouTube, or my website.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time. As always, it's always a pleasure to speak to you. And thanks for everything you do, and we'll speak soon.
We'll see you soon.
See you soon. Cheers, fellas.